Good morning. I'm Craig D'Onofrio, sitting in for Andy Bates. KFUO, celebrating our 90 years of broadcasting the gospel. I'm astonished. I know I keep saying it all the time, but 90 years of proclaiming the gospel without a stop. Well, we stop at the end of the day, but still, we continue every day. And what an amazing thing it is to be part of this ministry of Worldwide KFUO, to be able to do this day in and day out, to tell you about Jesus Christ and Him crucified for the forgiveness of sins. And it's an amazing thing, knowing that we're going out to the four corners of the world, reaching out to, places like North Korea, where we can't even send missionaries. What an amazing gift it is. And all of the voices that we have here, the various programs and people who make all this happen. Well, with us is Pastor Paul Deventer. You know his voice, by the way. And he's been with KFUO and involved with KFUO for years. He's a past executive director of the Board of for Communication Services of the Missouri Synod. That's what I'm trying to say. And Paul, you've been a part of KFUO since when?
Well, shortly after it was founded. No, actually not.
1926?
Yeah, not quite that far back. But I started at KFUO as a seminary student. I was a seminary student, and at the time KFUO was using seminary students as part-time workers, student workers. Occasionally, one of the students would end up on the air, and that happened in my case. So the year was 1971, the first time I appeared on the air at KFUO. So that's quite a few years ago.
And 22 years later, this Italian-Irish kid came to the seminary and did the same kind of thing. So that would be me, by the way.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You have a very interesting background, Craig. You've done a lot of things, and I guess you've experienced radio in a variety of settings. So, you bring a lot to the table, too, in terms of what's happened with the industry, what's happened with technology, what's happened with radio, and what happens when the Holy Spirit calls you to be part of a ministry that uses the technology we know as radio.
It really is an amazing thing, and thank you for that compliment, Paul. That means a lot, especially coming from someone like you, who's been around, who's seen so much. You've kind of become an expert in the history of KFUO over the years, haven't you?
Well, I've lived about half of it, so I don't know if that makes me an expert, but I've been blessed. Craig, when I attended the seminary, I don't know what your plans were as a seminary student, but my plans were to be a parish pastor. I looked forward to that opportunity. It was something I wanted to do from a young age on, and had worked in radio right out of high school, actually, throughout college and seminary years, just as a part-time job to earn some money to pay for college and seminary. Never thinking that radio would be part of my career. I was going to be a parish pastor. But when I graduated, the seminary thought that experience with radio could be used in the church as well, and I was assigned from the seminary to KFUO Radio. That was my first call. And it's been wonderful. It's a testimony to the way the Holy Spirit works. It's not always our plan that sees the light of day, but His plan. And it's been a wonderful career. And frankly, my time with KFUO beginning in 1971 and really continuing to this very day has been marvelous. I can't imagine a ministry that would have been more interesting, exciting, one where I saw more change than I did in the broadcast industry, and at KFUO. I can't imagine any ministry that would have been more fulfilling and exciting than the one I've had at KFUO.
Hmm. I went to seminary with the idea of becoming a professor, but by the time that I finished that MDiv degree, that PhD seemed pretty far away, so that never happened. I had no idea that I would end up here, and I gladly served the parish for about 15 years before the Lord saw fit to bring me here, always with a toe in broadcasting, though, and it's always been a passion in my life. Now, Paul, let's go back to the earliest of days of KFUO before you were here, but I know that you know a lot about this. The guys that got together and dreamt this thing up, radio was still a brand new technology at the time, just a few years old, really, and AM broadcasting. The government had just started issuing licenses not long before these guys got together. Do you know how that first meeting went and what the process was of starting Worldwide KFUO?
No, I'm sure it wasn't a single meeting, although at some point in the process, the Board of Control of Concordia Seminary, the Walther League, the Lutheran Layman's League, I mean, the entities that were involved in helping to establish KFUO, obviously had to do some things officially. I don't know what the best example would be today. If we went back 25 years, maybe it would be the use of satellite. I mean, satellite was something that we were hearing more about, satellite broadcasting, all of that sort of thing. You know, I was part of that era, too, and we talked about, well, how can the church use satellite? KFUO actually, used satellite broadcasting for quite a number of years. Back in the in the teens and early 1920s, there was a lot of talk of radio, and those in the church, particularly visionaries, who saw, you know, all of the changes taking place in transportation, in manufacturing, in communication, in technology, saw all of those changes as new ways in which to share the gospel with people. And so the idea of radio as a gift given from God, which it was, and in fact that's true of all technology. I mean, God gives us many gifts, and he gives them to the church and to individual Christians to use in responsible ways to further the cause of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Those tools are used in a variety of ways, of course. Not all to the glory of God, certainly. But that's why God gives the gifts. And so those individuals in the early 1920s were saying, this radio thing, it wasn't even called radio initially. It was wireless telegraphy and other names. But this thing that's happening with sending sound through the airwaves sounds like something God has given for the church to use. Walter A. Meyer, a name well known in our church body and in broadcast history, of course, was involved with the Walther League at the time, a young professor at Concordia Seminary. And he started, you know, talking it up. This is something we really ought to pursue, a radio station. I mean, using radio to share the gospel. And others got excited. The Lutheran Publicity Organization, Lutheran Layman's League, which wasn't formed until 1917, so it was a young organization at the time, got excited about the possibility. Seminary students went home on Christmas vacation, talked to their congregations about providing some support to establish a Lutheran radio station. And by 1924, that had all come together, the $14,000 or $15,000 needed to put the station on the air, was raised from the various groups that were involved, and the dream, the vision of Dr. Meyer and Dr. Fritz, who was a dean at the seminary, and Richard Kretschmar, who was district president of the Western District, the predecessor to the Missouri District, the three that we recognize as founders, and all the individuals who helped raise money, who encouraged others to think big thoughts about a Lutheran radio station. That all came together in 1924, and KFUO was born. And as I think you indicated earlier, you know, just a handful of radio stations in 1924. The first one was officially licensed by the government in 1920 and officially went on the air in 21 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We were among the pioneers in broadcasting and certainly a pioneer in religious broadcasting. And we weren't the only one. There were others that were trying to do the same thing. But by God's grace, KFUO today is celebrating 90 continuous years. The dream and the work of the people in the early 1920s is still bearing fruit today.
I think about what it would have been like to have been around in those days, the Roaring Twenties, a time of pretty much really decent economic prosperity, the ability to raise these funds and all of the rest, and how this got off the ground. It's almost as though the Lord knew what he was doing, Paul, and he saw that we could launch this at a time of prosperity when funding was available. Do you have any information about what KFUO was like during the Depression, though, in the 1930s? Was it a time of great trial, do you know?
Well, perhaps the best example of what happened in the 1930s would be the Lutheran Hour, which, you know, was launched as the Lutheran Radio Hour in 1930, growing out of the KFUO Radio Committee in 1929. And initially in 1930 was part of the infant CBS radio network. So it was broadcast through a number of stations at the time. But the Depression came along and the Lutheran Hour, the very young Lutheran Hour, went off the air for actually several years before it was revived and came back in the mid-1930s. And that was the result of, you know, the inability to generate the support necessary to keep the program on the air. KFUO at the time was sharing the 550 spot on the AM dial with KSD, and KSD really controlled the lion's share of the broadcast day at the 550 spot on the dial. So KFUO was responsible for only several hours a day through most of the 1930s, which meant that the financial resources needed to keep the station on the air were much smaller than they were after that time, and certainly much less than what's needed today to do a 24-hour broadcast operation through radio and the internet, as KFUO is currently doing. But it was a difficult time. It was a difficult time for many Lutheran organizations, and KFUO and the Lutheran Hour were just several of those.
There was some controversy between KFUO and KSD back then, wasn't there?
Yes, indeed. Both stations, of course, wanted, both organizations wanted to use the 550 spot. 550 is a a good spot on the radio dial, a good license that allowed basically maximum power on the AM band. But KSD, initially owned by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, you know, was perhaps in a better position to convince the Federal Communications Commission that they deserved the 550 spot and KFUO should be moved to another spot. It did go into litigation in the late 1930s, both stations hoping the FCC would grant the 550 spot to them. As it turns out, KSD was able to retain the 550 spot, and KFUO moved to the 830 spot on the AM dial for a short period of time, and then to the 850 spot. And at the time, for those at KFUO, it was not necessarily a bad move. 850, if you can think of the radio dial in the late 30s and 1940s, was right. Well, it still is, but it's less important today because of everything that's digital. But 850 was kind of right in the middle of the AM dial. That was a nice place to be. As people moved across the dial from one end to the other, they'd, you know, perhaps hit 850. So it was a good spot on the AM dial. And the concern about the lack of the ability of KFUO to broadcast 24 hours a day was less of a concern at that time because, you know, folks were not given to listening to radio or entertainment in the late evening hours or early morning hours anyway. Hmm. But that was the, I would say, kind of an unfortunate compromise made at the time in the late 30s, early 1940s, to accept a position on the radio dial that was licensed to broadcast only during daylight hours. And that remains to this day. You compensate for that very well with the internet broadcasting 24 hours a day. But, you know, prior to the advent of the internet and the ability to broadcast that way, the loss of the ability to reach people after sunset or before sunrise has been, in my estimation, unfortunate. I wish that in the 1940s a spot on the dial could have been acquired that allowed KFUO to broadcast round the clock.
I've often wondered about this. The fact that KFUO has been around since 1924, I guess the government doesn't think like I do. If they did, we'd have a wonderful world, I guess. But but it seems that since KFUO had been around for so long, it doesn't make sense that we would end up as a daylight-only station while the station with the same frequency out of Denver would be allowed to do the 24-hour broadcast. But I suppose that a lot of that has to do with money and influence and that sort of thing. Do you know how that came to be?
Well, it's really something that was established very early in broadcasting, and the purpose was to establish a number of clear channel radio stations around the country that at night, because of the ionosphere and the ability of the AM signal to bounce off the ionosphere and come back down to Earth, a radio station at night could cover a good portion of the United States. Consequently, those individuals living in remote areas where there were no radio stations could at least have, you know, contact with the world, a radio station at night. KOA Denver was one of the stations designated as a clear channel station, and the 850 spot on the dial was designated that way. So initially the theory was that at night, everyone in the United States would be able to hear a radio station because it would be the only station on the air at that specific spot on the dial. So there were a number of spots on the dial. There's a clear channel station out of Little Rock, Minneapolis, New Orleans, WBZ Boston, Chicago, a number of clear channel stations, but the reason for establishing clear channel stations kind of went away because most communities, even in remote areas, are served by local radio stations. But if you were a radio station that had a clear channel frequency facility, why would you give that up? And that's where we are today. The initial reason for the stations no longer exists, but the stations that have that special privilege retain it. And I know when we lived in St. Louis, I haven't tried it where we live now, but early in the morning before KFUO went on the air, you could listen to KOA Denver. And in the evening, you could listen to KOA Denver. Now, there was no great reason to do that, but, you know, the technology was such that it still worked. Those stations could cover much of the United States at night.
It is a little staticky, but it does still come through. And yes. Those clear channel stations, as you're pointing out, kind of a regional thing. And I have to assume that some sort of public safety was probably involved with that also, to disseminate information in cases of disasters and that sort of thing. We're talking with Pastor Paul Deventer about the history of KFUO. We need to go ahead and take a break here, but when we come back, we'll continue on with this fascinating discussion about 90 years of broadcasting the gospel. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is an absolutely radical pro-abortion politician. He advocates abortion throughout pregnancy for any reason, and he's tried to force his extreme beliefs onto the state. In part, he succeeded. New York City is the abortion capital of the nation. In some areas, more babies are aborted than those being born. The voters clearly repudiated the governor in the midterm election. They elected a pro-life majority in the state Senate, which will block his radical legislation in the future. One of the heroes in this situation is New York State Right to Life, that worked tirelessly to elect pro-life candidates. Of the nearly 100 races they worked on, a whopping 88% were elected. God bless these New York pro-lifers. They're saving lives.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
KFUO celebrates our 90th anniversary. On December 14th, 1924, from a small attic studio in St. Louis, KFUO was heard for the very first time. Our founders used the motto, "Keeping Forward." upward and onward to go along with the call letters assigned at the station. And from that day on, KFUO has moved forward through each decade, proclaiming a Christ-centered message. We've moved upward with broadcasting in AM, FM, HD, and satellite syndication of KFUO programs. Worldwide KFUO continues to move onward, using today's technologies including internet streaming, on-demand programs, and podcasting. The mission of that first day is the mission we have today. Go out and proclaim the gospel. Now, through the end of January, join us for fun and memories during this 90-day celebration with a new theme each week, reflecting on our 90 years of ministry. KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Two pastors, one an Italian wise guy, and the other a Ukrainian academic. What happens when you put them in the same room with no script and a bunch of sound effects? Well, you're just going to have to tune in to find out. The God Whisperers on Worldwide KFUO, Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central. They're fun-loving, a little off the wall, but always solidly Lutheran. You will learn something every time or double your money back. It's okay to enjoy being Lutheran. Do you have a reason to reach out to us at Worldwide KFUO? Is there a piece of communication you'd like for us to receive? It's not hard to reach us. Our street address is KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. If you missed it, the street address is found at the bottom of our homepage online, kfuoam.org. Every day we bring you the gospel of Jesus Christ in word and song. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. We're the messenger of good news. I'm Pastor Craig D'Onofrio, sitting in for the vacationing Andy Bates, lucky guy. And we're talking with Pastor Paul Devantier about the history of Worldwide KFUO as we celebrate 90 years of broadcasting the gospel. And we kind of got up to the 1930s, I think, Paul. In the 1930s, you mentioned that some of the programming on KFUO started to be syndicated. What programs were being syndicated? And I'm curious also the technology behind that. Before satellite and all of the stuff that we have going on now with the internet, how were things syndicated? With reel-to-reel, with records, or how was that done? Do you know?
Well, KFUO really got into that in the 1950s. But in the 1930s, the Lutheran Hour was kind of the pioneer in syndicated broadcasting, and it did so through existing networks. Initially, the CBS radio network that carried the programming on a weekly basis. Later, when it came back, other networks were used. So it wasn't a distribution of programs pre-recorded, but programming live on existing networks that group together a number of radio stations and broadcast the same programming. Recording, you know, in its many forms, from wire to tape to vinyl, emerged beginning in the 1940s. At least in a form that could be used economically. And by the 1950s, KFUO was fully engaged in recording programs and making those programs available to other radio stations. The KFUO Extension Service began in 1956, but even prior to that time, KFUO was using the technology. And in most instances in the 1950s, it was long play record albums that were used for recording programs and making those programs available to other stations. So the long play record albums would be cut and packaged and sent to radio stations, and stations would use those long play record albums. Bible study programs, a lot of choral programs, music, choirs, that sort of thing that really made KFUO in the 1950s, again, kind of a pioneer in program syndication, development of programs that could be used by others. So KFUO became, you know, the flagship, continued its broadcasting in the greater St. Louis area, made some of those programs available to other radio stations.
Programs like Portals of Prayer, a daily devotion, I know was sent out to hundreds of outlets around the world, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, Craig, at one point, there may have been as many as 600 or 700 radio stations using Portals of Prayer, which began in 1956. So the KFUO Extension Service, with its syndicated programs, was really very successful. Back in the 1950s and before, of course, radio stations, regardless of whether they were secular or religious, used some religious programming. I mean, I remember as a child growing up, my mother listened to a religious program every morning on the local radio station that was, as I recall, it was an NBC affiliate. It was a secular radio station, but it programmed some religious programming. That's less true today, as you well know. It's difficult to get our programming on many radio stations. And, of course, there are many more religious radio stations today, and those are the stations that tend to take the religious programming. But back then, very successful, 600-700 radio stations using programs produced at KFUO.
I know when I was a kid, and this was probably well after Lutheran Hour had become independent, Lutheran Hour was broadcast in Southern California on K-Earth 101, which is a oldies rock station. But on Sunday mornings, there was the Lutheran Hour. And really kind of shocking as I look back that here on this rock and roll station was religious broadcasting like that. That was a day and age also when the government had mandatory equal time kind of things, and stations would put on religious broadcasting and more public service kind of thing, wasn't it?
Yes, and that's still true today. I mean, radio stations do have a responsibility to the communities they serve, but, you know, some of the actual requirements have been lessened through the years in terms of the amount of time devoted to public affairs, public service programming, and religious programming, at least for many years, was considered public service.
Time marched on, and through the 30s and into the 40s, these enterprising people, these Lutherans, saw that there was a new and emerging kind of radio coming out, FM. And the audio quality was superior. The reach, maybe not quite as far, required a lot more wattage to get the same distance. But once again, the Lutherans were on the front of this, weren't they?
Absolutely. And in fact, among the very first owners of an FM frequency, a licensee of an FM frequency. Are you, Craig, one of those individuals that stays on top of all of the emerging technology and understands it?
Oh, gosh. I can't keep up with it. I wish that there was some sort of a guide for what the future holds, you know. But what we have right now, I'm kind of on top of, but I wonder what's going to happen next week in the technology world.
And it seems today, you know, that technology changes very quickly, and many people catch on very quickly to the latest technology. When, you know, when the latest iPhone comes out, people stand in line to get it.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing, as I look at the history of broadcasting and look back to the 1940s, is that there were some, you know, who saw FM as the superior broadcast technology, and they were very excited to introduce it. And there were some at KFUO who felt, you know, the future of broadcasting was as much FM as AM. And we talked about the fact that AM, you know, was limited to a daylight operation. FM gave KFUO the opportunity to broadcast 24 hours. So the same programming appeared on the AM and the FM stations in 1948 and for many years thereafter. But when the AM went off the air, the FM could continue to broadcast and fill those evening and overnight hours. But what's always interested me is why it took so long for FM to really catch on as the superior technology. I mean, it seems today we do that in 24 hours, and in the mid-20th century, it took 24 years. I mean, the FM didn't really overtake the AM in terms of listenership until, you know, the 1960s or as late as 1970. AM remained the dominant frequency, and FM, even though it was superior in terms of sound quality, didn't catch on as quickly as people seem to catch on to new technologies today. But the reality is that you know, the visionaries in the 1940s were right. It was a great investment, and it allowed for more programming, evening, overnight programming, and ultimately programming of a somewhat different format as the broadcast industry changed to become an industry with very specialized programming. If you want to listen to country music, you go to this station. If you want to listen to programming, you go to this station. If you want to listen to classical music, you go to this station. Very specialized. That wasn't true 50 years ago. But it's certainly true now, and the FM gave KFUO an opportunity to become a bit more specialized in its programming and attracting audiences that had an interest in that kind of programming.
In 1975, KFUO FM stopped doing a simulcast with the AM, is that correct?
Yes.
And they became a classical station, and they became truly a world-class classical station at that, didn't they?
Yes, and it was very appropriate. I mean, I've always thought it was very appropriate. If any church body would be in the business of providing classical and sacred classical music, it would be the Lutheran Church, because so much wonderful music came out of the Lutheran Reformation and the centuries that have followed. Johann Sebastian Bach, of course, a very prominent Lutheran. And our Lutheran educational institutions, grade schools, high schools, universities, and congregations have always appreciated and respected the history, the heritage, the tradition of the Lutheran contribution to sacred classical music. So for the Lutherans to have a classical station just seemed extremely appropriate. And So in 1975, the opportunity to devote more time to classical music, sacred classical music, was seized, and Classic 99 was born, as it were, a station devoted 24 hours a day in stereo to the broadcast of classical music.
That FM broadcast, the transmitter that we had, was a very powerful one in the region, and it kept pumping out classical music until 2010 when it was sold. And I'd rather not get into that whole situation. That's something that is still to this day somewhat controversial in some circles. But technology marched on. And before any of the sell-off happened or anything like that, KFUO started streaming on the internet. We put together a website in 1998 and started streaming. Now, Paul, this is kind of surprising to me that when there were so few podcasts and so few stations streaming, that we got in on that. But when I worked at KFUO in 1993 as a seminarian, CDs had been around for a while, but we just finally got CDs in the station there. And I thought, boy, this place is behind the curve on technology. And now here I am some years later looking back and saying, wow, we were actually ahead of the curve on so many things. But, being frugal Lutherans, we use the technology up until it can't be used anymore, I think.
Yes, you're probably right. But I've had that personal experience with the By the Way program. I began as speaker on that program in 1974, so this is my 40th anniversary of doing that program. But we were using vinyl, long play record albums. We would record 2 weeks worth on each side of a long play record album. So each album had a month's worth of messages, at that time Portals of Prayer messages. And then from that, we moved to cassette tapes, very inexpensive by comparison, but sound quality and dependability were not that great. And then to CDs, and I don't remember exactly when that happened, probably in the 80s, sometime in the 80s. And now we don't produce the program on anything other than the computer, the hard drive, and then send it to radio stations via the internet. So, that program has provided an opportunity for me to see the great changes that have taken place in technology.
It is truly amazing when we look at the technology. Pastor Mike Horton from the White Horse Inn, I heard him speaking once, and this stuck in my memory. He said, this was back in the 90s, early 90s, and he said, I stand in front of my fax machine screaming faster, faster, only to realize that it was maybe 100 years before that news traveled only as fast as your horse. And now, as the internet has gone from dial-up modem to, high-speed modems that we have now, and waiting for the material to come through, we're still impatient, even though it comes through at an extremely fast rate. And it's just amazing as we look toward the future to imagine what is next and what's around the corner with the technology that we have. People are starting to get rid of their computers these days. They have tablets and smartphones and all of this kind of stuff. And to think that KFUO has been taking advantage of this from the inception of this kind of technology, people like Gary Duncan, who's still here, had that vision early on when there were something like 500 podcasts in the world. And Gary and some others saw that, hey, we can get in on this. We can start podcasting our content and get it out around the world. And we started in on that. Were you involved with any of those early days of the podcasting?
Well, the Lord never gifted me with the ability to understand all of that technology. I always appreciated those who did. I I knew what the technology could accomplish. I had no idea how it happened or how to create it. But yes, you know, I remember the days when we talked about new forms of syndication, used satellite for the first time for the Missouri Synod, and then, you know, the podcast came along and other ways to distribute programming. And there were always people who seemed, you know, like Gary, you mentioned Gary, who seemed to understand, who were gifted by God with the ability to understand technology and then to apply the latest technology to the mission of the church. And I'm convinced that that's going to be true in the future as well. I mean, things are changing at a more rapid pace these days, but the Lord will provide individuals who see the opportunities on the horizon and will do all they can to make the best use of the new gifts that God gives to accomplish His purposes. So thank God for all those people. In fact, you know, before we end our time together this morning, I think it's appropriate to say praise the Lord for all the people He has given through the years to be applauders, supporters, encouragers, volunteers, professionals, staff members, organizations that have supported KFUO. None of the 90 years would have been possible without people who were inspired in one way or another to become part of KFUO, to volunteer time, to provide financial resources, congregations that broadcast their worship services, organizations, foundations that provided significant support to the radio station. We'll never have a list of all of those people. Maybe in heaven we can have a gathering of all of those people. And maybe invite to that gathering all of those whose faith was strengthened, or individuals who really came to faith through the working of the Holy Spirit using KFUO programming and so forth. It's a large number, and I've never known really how to say thank you in an appropriate way to all of those people who have made KFUO possible. But I'd like to say thanks to each and every one of them, and I know there are many today, and if they're listening, thanks for what you do to keep a tradition alive that is very meaningful in the lives of many individuals. Thank God for all the people who have been in our part of KFUO.
It's really, really appropriate that you point out that it is the people who have been involved that have made this ministry happen. As we have our share-a-thon every year, we get people who call in and say, you know, back in the 50s, my husband and I used to come and answer the phones.
Sure.
Or back in the 60s. And people who have been supporting the work of KFUO faithfully throughout the years, people who remember us in their wills and trusts and so many other ways, knowing that we are touching lives out there. As we get emails and letters from people thanking us for putting the gospel into their ears for the first time, I am deeply humbled and moved by those sorts of things. And we are very, very grateful for each and every one of you who listen, who participate, who call, who support the work that we do and so many other things. Paul, just a few minutes left, and you touched on something. I wanted to rewind briefly here. There was a thing called the Jubilee Network that came out of KFUO for a time, and that was a satellite effort. Could you talk a little bit about the blessings that were occurring at that time to KFUO?
Yeah, as I recall, you know, there were quite a number of discussions, maybe in the 70s already and the 1980s, to find a new way to market and distribute programming produced by KFUO. We were confident, those of us involved at KFUO at the time, we were confident that some of the programming that was appearing on KFUO was of such quality that other stations would have an interest in using it. And how do we reach those stations? How do we promote the programming? Well, we packaged a number of individual programs, short form and longer form programming. I think of Joy, for example, the classical music program, the hour-long weekly program that's still on KFUO. I think of that as an example. How do we package that? How do we distribute it? And as satellite came along, it became easier for us to think about a significant initial investment in the satellite uplink, but not an ongoing weekly production of CDs or tape recordings or whatever, and postage costs and so forth to send to all of the radio stations. So satellite became, a marvelous way to distribute programming. I don't recall where the name Jubilee came from, but it was an attempt to kind of set the network apart from KFUO. Not that we didn't want to acknowledge KFUO, but in the broadcast, in the religious broadcast industry, networks were very popular, and thought it might be easier to distribute programming under the name of a syndicated network than a competing radio station, as it were, to those stations we were trying to reach. So that's how Jubilee came about, and satellite was used quite effectively for its lifetime. I mean, it's still used, of course, but at this point in time, most stations take syndicated programming directly from the internet, and satellite is no longer necessary unless it's used for live call-in program. If you wanted to do a live call-in program from coast to coast, you might consider the possibility of satellite as a distribution methodology. But just, as you indicate, Craig, just another example of what's happening in our world and what resources is God giving us at the present time to accomplish His purposes. And by the grace of God, KFUO through the years has been able to have people involved who were always looking for new and better ways, along with the old tried and true ways, to reach people with the assurance that they are loved by an eternal God who has an eternity planned for them.
Well, with that, we call it a close on the program here. Pastor Paul Deventer, thanks so much for being with us on Faith and Family today.
Well, nice being with you, Craig, and best wishes to all the good people at KFUO.
Thank you. God bless. Stay tuned for more radio goodness on Worldwide KFUO as we continue with Thy Strong Word. Until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you in His grace. I'll see you later.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.